Hello, I'm Mario LeBlanc. This is number 0110, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0110. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Ian Bogost, who is the author of How to Do Things with Video Games. Who did you write the book for?
My hope is that this book will be for anybody who's maybe thought briefly about games or has them in their lives or doesn't know what to think about them and wants a perspective that isn't going to be either that games are terrific and the best thing ever or that games are ruining our lives.
Adrian Mazzone from the Transmedia Group PR firm talks about product placement in films. Does the product pay to be placed in the film, or does the film pay to use the product?
I think it still does go both ways, where you can pay to have your client involved in a film, but other times productions look at it as a wonderful opportunity to hook up with a PR firm that has a client, and this way it adds to the publicity of the movie, promoting even the cast of the movie, and everybody, it's a win-win for all involved.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and I'll be taking care of business on this edition of Book Banter with Randy Backman's Vinyl Tap Stories, as well as two favorite books about the golden age of Canadian rock music. Yes, there is such a thing. So you ain't seen nothing yet, baby. Coming up later on the Stuff File program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0110, is Mario LeBlanc, who is a consultant and instructor with CEFA. They train first responders and those who do construction near water on water safety. They also do water safety on movie sets and supply medics for movie sets. Now, you can find out more about who they are and what they do at CEFA by going to their website, and you'll find their website on my website. A link will be there. Just go to thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is 0110, and you'll find the link. And, oh yeah, Mario also happens to be my best friend on the planet. Thank you very much, Mario, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, police in Christchurch, New Zealand are searching for a woman who allegedly stole about $800 in Botox treatment. Now, according to Senior Constable Helen Mannin-Stroud, the woman provided doctors with a false name, address, and phone number, and then let them photograph her face for a before picture. Now, afterward, she went out to the desk and told staff that her wallet was in the car. She went out of the door and was last seen running off down the road. Police checked the address the woman provided, but she didn't live there, so they are only left with the photographs that she let them take. According to the police, it beggars belief that someone could do a runner after getting a photo like that. We have about 6 photographs of her to work from. I'm looking forward to her mugshot when she's caught. That'll be the one with absolutely no facial expression. Anyway, after running up a $38 tab, a man tried to leave the restaurant at Brown Social House in North Vancouver, British Columbia. When the staff stopped him to demand payment, the man said he was just going next door and would be back. Next door is a gas station. Within minutes, police got a robbery alarm call at the gas station. By the time they arrived, the man had returned to the restaurant to pay his bill with the money he allegedly just robbed from the gas station. It is not every day a criminal will tell a victim what his next move will be and then go and just do it, said North Vancouver RCMP Constable Richard DeJong. Corey Henderson, age 21, was charged with robbery, possession of a dangerous weapon, and fraudulently obtaining food and beverage. Want to bet he had an overabundance of said beverage? I'm just guessing. Moving right along, a couple drove to the Locksley, Alabama Police Department to make a report. At first, when they said they wanted to report that they had attempted suicide, we thought they had used sleeping pills or something else along those lines, said Lieutenant Doug Phillips. As the discussion continued, the officers realized they both had gunshot wounds to the head, so they called for medical assistance. The couple had agreed to a suicide pact because of financial hardships. The 70-year-old man shot his 65-year-old wife in the back of the head while parked in their pickup truck. He then turned the gun on himself, but when he realized neither of them were dead, he drove to the police department. The man was flown to the hospital by medical helicopter and the woman taken by ambulance. They are both expected to survive. No criminal charges are pending, believe it or not. On the other hand, they can expect a $20,000 bill for the medical chopper and about $1,000 for the ambulance, thus increasing their financial hardships. Elsewhere, Jason Dean, age 24, was arrested in Ringgold, Georgia in August and charged with false imprisonment after he waited in the parking lot of a Taco Bell, approached an 18-year-old woman, and handcuffed her to himself. After her screams brought others to come to help her, Dean explained that he had been trying for several months to get the woman to go out with him, but that she had so far refused. Yeah. What do you think your chances are now, pal? You know, he was almost the idiot of the day, but he's not. That comes later. Meanwhile, here's another winner from the shallow end of the dating pool. A toe-sucking bandit is on the loose in central Arkansas. Our gross friend has allegedly approached two women in the area and asked to suck their toes. His third victim was an elderly woman who said the guy approached her while she was sitting outside her apartment and forced her toes into his mouth. However, there may be more than one sucker. The first two victims described the suspect as a white middle-aged male, while the third victim identified her attacker as an Asian or Hispanic male. Police are doing all they can to track the sucker down. In the meantime, ladies, may I suggest you avoid open-toed shoes or flip-flops. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? In recent years, video games have moved to the center of popular culture, and they are increasingly used for purposes other than entertainment. Ian Bogost is the author of How to Do Things with Video Games, and he's on the line with us right now. Hi, Ian.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So there was a time when video games was just the domain of basically teenage boys.
Yeah, that's what we remember anyway. We're either as kids or teenage boys playing games, although even that's a misconception, it turns out, because video games were very much for adults in the 1970s.
So who is the target audience for this book, and what is the biggest point you're trying to get across?
So my hope is that this book will be for anybody who's maybe thought briefly about games or has them in their lives or doesn't know what to think about them and wants a perspective that isn't going to be either that games are terrific and the best thing ever or that games are ruining our lives. And the central argument that I'm making is that games are a medium. They can be used for lots of different purposes, just like writing or images could be used for lots of different purposes. And by seeing them that way, they become, you know, less terrifying, less scandalous, and more ordinary, more just like a tool we can use to participate in our lives.
So there's a group of people out there, an entire generation, let's say, who write off video games as we said earlier, as toys. But even the video game enthusiast, you're getting him or her to look at video games differently as well, right?
Yeah, in some ways, I'm kind of against the whole idea of the video game enthusiast, as counterintuitive as that may sound. One of the problems with our current understanding of games is precisely that we've cultured this identity of the gamer who is supposedly playing games all the time and only partaking of games in terms of their their way of engaging with the world. And I think that's a little bit of a caricature, but not too much in some ways. The game as a medium is something that we might want to consider using in the right cases and forgoing in other cases. So I see games and gamers as really a kind of shorthand for a current moment in which we're trying to figure out what games are all about. And I hope that eventually those terms like identifying somebody for the media they consume will go away, and in their place we'll have lots of people playing games for different reasons at different times.
So your ideas on changing the thought process and how people view games that they play or that others play, do you apply that same thought process to the people who create the games? In other words, creating games differently from how they've been up until this point?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the ways that the games industry likes to think of itself is as a part of the entertainment industry, and that's true. They are generally providing entertainment in the same way that Hollywood provides entertainment or the way that the book industry provides entertainment. But you know, if you think about books as an example, books do lots of things beyond provide entertainment, don't they? There are books that are written that teach us how to cook or, you know, how to use a particular kind of technology or how to help ourselves improve in our jobs. And those kinds of authors are going about their practice differently. They're addressing a different audience. They're talking about the things they're discussing in different ways. They have different conventions, different communities. And just as they are able to take a medium like writing and turn it into a different practice, so video game developers can take a medium like video games and deploy it in different practices. And what I think we'll see in the future are game developers kind of all out in the world doing different tasks with games, not just holed up in the games industry making entertainment.
So can you give us an idea, an example of something you see differently being done in the gaming world that's not being done now?
So let me start with an example that's actually familiar in the gaming world that I talk about, and that's music. You know, there have been these very popular commercial games like Rock Band and Guitar Hero that have been sold as an entertainment practice. And I think if you look at that and ask, well, you know, in what way, instead of it being just a video game, is it actually a way of experiencing music, and how would we recast that experience of music in game terms in the same way that, let's say, the music video did for music in the early 1980s. Now that's an example of a change that maybe is, you know, very close to us in time. Something that's maybe a little further away that I've spent a long time working on, both in my writing and in my game design practice, is political speech. So, you know, communicating political and social positions or messages or persuading people toward, you know, supporting legislation, these sorts of activities, there have been experiments to try them in game form, but they're certainly not mainstream. And games happen to have a lot to offer to that kind of domain because they're able to present complexity and experience and give us a kind of feeling of what it would be like to live in a world if it operated according to, let's say, some legislative plan. So, you know, those are two examples, one kind of very near to us and close to home, and maybe another one a little further away that gives a sense of some of the ways that the games might touch our lives in the future.
One of the things, and to put it in a more visual idea, you talk about something like Guitar Hero. Another thing is, because people think of video gamers, they used to think of somebody just sitting at home, a couch potato, getting carpal tunnel. The Wii has changed that a lot, too.
That's right.
You're very active. Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, the other thing I want to mention, too, is it seems to be that video games are progressing much in the way something as simple as the cell phone. When the cell phone first came along, it was just a business tool, a very expensive business tool that had one application, that is a phone that wasn't tethered to the base unit. Now we look at what cell phones do today, and they are a part of life.
Yeah, absolutely true. So technological changes, you know, have always been a part of games, and in fact, maybe they've been the primary driver of innovation in game design. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we've looked at those technological changes and kind of asked what they're good for. We've seen them as improvements, whatever that means. And something like the mobile phone or the smartphone, you know, which is always with us and has all this information and knows our location, if we think of that as an invitation to deploy different kinds of games in different ways, then what ideas might come to mind? Well, you know, for one, the experience we have of being somewhere is something that's being altered by those devices, and that happens to be something that games are already particularly interested in, you know, the simulation of place and of giving us a sense of being somewhere else. And how can we use games to not only give us a sense of being somewhere else, but to give us a different sense of where we happen to be? And that's just one example of the way that we can interpret technological change as an invitation for different design techniques, but also different uses of games.
It's a double-edged sword, though, isn't it? I mean, there's a situation where somebody can explore and experience different things through the worlds of video games. The other side of that is some person is not exploring the real world because they're with video games.
Yeah, but I guess we could say that of books too, couldn't we? Or newspapers, yeah, or something. That, you know, when you're holed up in your couch reading a novel, that you're separated, isolated from the world. And you know, the trick is to think of media as an ecosystem that you want some variety in. You don't want to just be consuming one thing all the time, but rather to look to all sorts of different media and all sorts of different purposes to gain an interesting perspective on your life in general. So I'm advocating something relatively modest compared to some of the conversations you hear about games, and that's that, you know, games can be a productive, interesting part of our lives. It doesn't mean they have to take them over.
Bottom line, it's something to be embraced, the whole idea of video games. And like I said, there's an entire generation of people out there who aren't video game enthusiasts, but it's something that's to be embraced, not just simply dismissed as a toy.
To be embraced, to be seen in a more sophisticated way, and really to be understood, even by those who think that games aren't for them or that they don't participate in gameplay. You know, this is happening. This is a part of our world, and it's worth understanding for that reason.
I know you're a video game designer, but what are your favorite types of games, personally?
Personally, the kind of games that I enjoy the most tend to be these sort of very kind of clockwork-style games in which there are these sort of very complicated mechanisms driving some simulated world. So games like, you know, SimCity or Civilization on one side, and then, you know, maybe slightly more zoomed-in versions of games like there's a strange game called Animal Crossing that I like a lot, which is sort of a simulation of a little animal village over time. And then you know, games like Portal, puzzle games, games about kind of seeing space or ideas in an abstract way. I'm fond of those too. And I'm also really interested in what some people call you know, independent games or art games, these sort of kind of new experimental games that are trying to find and invent new conventions for gameplay.
Games that make you think, in other words.
Yeah, games that make you think in a different way, and they invite you to play them with something else in mind other than wasting some time or kind of, you know, experiencing power.
The book is called How to Do Things with Video Games. It's written by Ian Bogost. And Ian, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you.
Ian Bogost, author of How to Do Things with Video Games. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0110, and you'll find links to Ian's website, plus links to Amazon.com, where you can order his book directly for the Kindle.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that puts a smile on your face and a skip in your step. Please avoid skipping if you are driving.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk about product placement in movies. Plus, we have another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nallman. And, of course, there is an idiot of the day. But right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. Down in Brazil, 90-year-old Luiz Costa de Oliveira, a retired farm worker, is telling quite a story of how he has 50 children. 17 came from his first wife before she died. He remarried and had another 17 kids with his second wife. But then it gets weird. Now, during his second marriage, he also had a long affair with his wife's sister, who gave birth to 15 of his children. Oh, and then it gets really weird. He even had a fling with his mother-in-law, which resulted in one child. Oliveira says, "The best thing God made in the world was women. I could even have other children and not know it because I always like to go out with women." He also claims more than 100 grandchildren and 30 great-grandchildren. "I don't know all the names, but I know that I have many children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren scattered around." Yeah, that's lovely. Oliveira's second wife and sister-in-law said that his secret was that he was always kind to women, explaining he never mistreated any of us, always took care of the children, and never let us lack for anything in the house. Man, those Brazilian women are pretty darn understanding, aren't they? Wow. Now, wait a minute. He had kids with his second wife, her mother, and her sister. That means some of his kids are their own siblings, cousins, and aunts and uncles. Yikes. Anyway, moving right along, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade, right? Or when life gives you earthquakes and tsunamis, make tourist traps. For many Japanese, life simply hasn't been the same since March 11th's trifold earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear disaster. But one thing's for sure, it's a great way to boost tourism. This summer, hordes of Japanese vacationers jumped onto trains, planes, and automobiles and headed not to the southern beaches, but to the tsunami wreckage of the damaged Tohoku region in the northeast. Now, top of the list of places to visit is a solitary 200-year-old pine tree in one particular region. It's the only one of 70,000 trees still standing in what was once a thriving forest before the tsunami hit. The tree has become a symbol of survival for the nation and has been drawing huge daily crowds. Yeah, disasters and tragedies will always take a backseat to capitalism. Okay, now, you're going to have a problem when you drive drunk to a liquor store drive-through window and find the only reason they have a drive-through window is because you just put it there. In Amherst, New York, 73-year-old, that's right, I said 73-year-old, Camille Kazmarczyk drove right through the front window of Kenwin Liquors, injuring the store's owner and a customer. She told police she accidentally hit the accelerator instead of the brake of her 2005 Honda. And yes, she was indeed drunk at the time and arrested on drunken driving charges. Wow. If you're a 73-year-old alcoholic woman, your liver must be pickled. And in Denver, 58-year-old Ronald Smith may be spending 18 years in prison for crimes involving raw chicken. No kidding. He placed raw chicken in his ex-wife's heating ducts and committed a few other acts of vandalism, including pouring an unknown substance into a baby grand piano and erasing the hard drive on his ex's computer. All told, there were several thousand dollars in damages, and the jury found him guilty. Amazingly, Smith was actually a state lobbyist who was hosting a fundraiser for then-Mayor John Hickenlooper on the night the vandalism occurred. Apparently, he arrived late and stayed only briefly because he was busy getting himself into all manner of mischief. He even went so far as to post a death notice on the back door of his ex's home that falsely alerted anyone coming to the house that she had died. Hope it was worth it, because all this could get him 18 years behind bars. You know, If I was his wife, I would take many exotic vacations while he's behind bars for the better part of 2 decades and send him pictures and loving postcards. Having a wonderful time. Glad you're not here. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, over in Australia, plans to turn a brothel into a super brothel have been nixed by the Sydney City Council, but not for why you would think. It wasn't the brothel's business that politicians found objectionable, but in an argument not unlike the battle over big box stores like Walmart in the United States and Canada, council members fear the mega brothel might squash the smaller mom-and-pop whorehouses. The proposed extension to the brothel, known as Stiletto, would have doubled the number of rooms to 40 and would have created a wing for group bookings. That won't happen now, so that the little up-and-coming hoes can have a chance. Why are our prices so low? Volume! Yes. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. When you watch a television show or a movie, there are many items you'll see on screen that are there for an advertising reason. That's called product placement. On the line with us right now is Adrian Mazzone, the Executive Vice President, Arts and Entertainment for the Transmedia Group. Adrian is on the line with us right now to talk about product placement via Skype-to-Skype communications from Florida. Hi, Adrian.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program. Now, the film that you're working on with product placement is called King's Faith, and I know we're going to talk about that on an upcoming show with the director of the movie, but I wanted to talk about product placement in movies because I don't think and television, because I don't think a lot of people are fully aware of this.
Yes, it's a wonderful outlet. It gives us, as a public relations firm, even more to promote our clients with.
Now, there used to be a time when films would have to pay a company to get their products in their movies or television shows. Now it's the other way around.
Well, I think it still does go both ways, where you can, pay to have your client involved in a film. But other times, productions look at it as a wonderful opportunity to hook up with a PR firm that has a client. And this way, it adds to the publicity of the movie, promoting even the cast of the movie, and everybody, it's a win-win for all involved.
So let's define it, because, again, when I say product placement, some people might not know what we're talking about. You have clients, they have products that they want seen in the movie. Give us an example. For instance, let's talk about King's Faith. What kind of products would show up in that movie, and how intricate, how entwined is it to the plot line, if at all?
Well, during the movie, there's several scenes that apparently fit a couple of my clients. One is a sunscreen product. So basically, for any outdoor shots, and one in particular was a volleyball game in the film. So it was perfect to have the sunscreen lying around in that scene being shot. Another product was a knife and forklift, which is basically dumbbells with cutlery at the end of it. So a fork, a knife, a spoon. And they had a kitchen scene, and they just had them set on the table. I had another client, Kessie K, she's a celebrity designer, and she had beautiful ties, and they had an event during the film, which it was more youthful, geared towards the youth, and one of the boys wound up wearing the ties in the film.
Okay, well, let's go back a little bit, because we're talking about product placement, so let's place those products. You mentioned a sunscreen company. Let's get the name out there.
Yeah, Dr. Fisher Sunscreen, and it's Ultrasol, and to get a sunscreen to stand out, because there's so many different sunscreens out there, every little bit helps. So to have it in a film, when that film hits the market, we'll be tweeting and Facebooking about it as well.
Now, we should mention that King's Faith is a faith-driven storyline. So I guess there's not a lot for people to be concerned about when it comes to having their products placed in such a film. But when it comes to product placement, do advertisers have to look over scripts and see if it's the right vehicle for them for their product?
Absolutely, because of all the different ratings, some companies don't want to be associated with, you know, a film that has some nudity or, you know, a lot of profanity. So, you know, we're a little bit discreet on how which film we go with.
Now, how does it work? Do you approach a particular film, or as someone who is in the PR game, you work with Transmedia Group, do films come to you and say, look, we're making this movie, do you have products that might be well aligned with our storyline or script?
Yeah, on occasion that'll happen. But for the most part, I'll shoot out an email saying, you know, these are perfect products if you have any upcoming films, TV shows, or, you know, even commercials that might be a fit. And sometimes you get lucky and they'll put it in there.
The situation, I'm sure you know commercials, it's a double-edged sword for the general population. I mean, we watch TV, we watch movies, we know that there is a certain cost involved to making these things, and that it is show business. That last part of the word is business, and therefore business has to be conducted. But people always complain about commercials. And I'm just wondering, do you find that some people are saying, hey, wait a minute, this whole product placement thing, I don't know if I want to be advertised to while I'm watching a film. Yet on the other side of that coin, products in the real world, that's part of reality.
Oh, without a doubt. And it's nothing better than being able to say, yeah, make sure you catch that film. My product's in it. So, yeah, I mean, some people have issues with the commercials and certain things. But for the most part, as a publicist, it's a wonderful outlet to buzz about.
Now, generally speaking, speaking of the buzz, how much bang for the buck does a client get? Everyone talks about, you know, lightning in a bottle. And I think the most classic situation, of course, is when E.T. came out and the folks at M&M said, no, we want no part of the film. Reese's Pieces jumped in and the rest is history. And I'm sure somebody at M&M is not working there anymore. how successful is product placement from the client's point of view?
Well, it depends. I mean, if you wind up in a film and it's actually the star of the film picks up that product, then you might be, launched instantly. Other times it could be just a quick passing and, you know, there's no way of really calculating it, but that's where we kick in and make sure people notice it. If you're going to watch this film, look at this scene, look at Dr. Fisher's sunscreen or the knife and forklift or one of Cassie Case's tie. And it gives me a lead-in, so it could go either way.
I think one of the things, too, in this day and age when we have Twitter and Facebook, that people tend to, in a more social way, tweet about things they watch and tweet about things they see. So you, as somebody in PR who's getting their client's name out there, have another outlet because people tweet about it, talk about it, put it on their Facebook status, things like that.
And it just keeps going from there because we'll retweet, you know, we repost, and believe it or not, it'll boost up people wanting to see that film.
So the film is an independent production. When is it available?
Well, they just finished their main production part, and they're just starting their editing, so it's kind of an unknown. You know, sometimes it goes fast, but they just completed the filming of it. So, you know, usually about within the year, so it could be 6 months.
Okay. And we'll have an opportunity. I believe it's Jim Pavone, who is the director and one of the producers of the film.
Yes. He'll have more details for you.
He'll have more details, and we'll have a chance to talk to Jim about this very interesting movie. As I mentioned, it's a faith-driven story for teens.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Crawford Wilson is one of the stars, and if you're not familiar, he was in Avatar. There's also a couple other high names, Lynn Whitfield, she was in Head of State, and James McDaniel from NYPD Blue.
Excellent.
So I believe it's going to be a very successful film, and I'm looking forward to just constantly working with them as my clients are always attached to it.
Well, it's interesting to see the film when it comes out. It's called King's Faith, and we'll get a chance to talk to the director in a future show. And look for those products. What is it? Dr. Fisher's Ultrasol Sunscreen?
Yes.
The Knife and Forklift? And yes. What is the Thai company?
It's KessieCase.com. It's a designer tie.
Excellent. I thank you very, very much, Adrian, for taking the time to be on the program to talk with us.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Adrian Mazzone, the Executive Vice President, Arts and Entertainment for the Transmedia Group. As mentioned, we'll learn more about the movie King's Faith when we talk to the director on a future show. Actually, we'll be talking to one of the executive producers on that future show. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. The NFL football season has begun without one of its biggest stars, quarterback Peyton Manning. He's been sidelined because of serious neck problems, and it was just reported that he flew to Europe for treatment. Why would he leave America to get treatment? Well, the Super Bowl champion quarterback was forced to leave the United States to get the stem cell treatment he wanted. It doesn't use the controversial embryonic stem cells, but it still hasn't been approved by the FDA, so Manning had to go to Europe. Now, I have tremendous respect for the FDA because it helps make our medicine and medical procedures safe. But I also know that one of the big reasons that more treatments like this aren't available here is America's lawsuit problem. Even if Manning signed a waiver to accept all risks, American courts can't be counted on to honor his wishes. Let's be fair, this shouldn't be happening, but it's forcing many families to be separated. We can do better. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And with us once again is Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter. Hi, Stu.
Hey, Peter, you ain't heard nothing yet. Baby, you just ain't heard nothing yet. Or ain't seen nothing yet, actually. I think Al Jolson. I don't know why. Al Jolson for Book Banter, because we're going to go musical, but Randy Bachman.
Oh, I thought you were developing a stutter. Okay.
Oh, no. No. Just trying to imitate a great moment in Canadian rock history, actually.
Okay.
But Randy Bachman, rock and roll renaissance man. He's a songwriter, singer, lead guitarist for the Guess Who and Bachman Turner Overdrive, or BTO. Guitar enthusiast and collector, he has over 300 guitars in his possession, and rock music legend. But a raconteur storyteller? Well, since 2005, Bachman has managed to fulfill that role quite well as the host of the popular CBC radio show Randy Bachman's Vinyl Tap. On the show, Bachman plays his favorite influential tunes and shares with his listeners the wealth of stories and anecdotes he has amassed over a 5-decade-long career in rock music. So it was only natural that he selected some of his favorite stories from the show and put them in book form, and the result is his highly enjoyable book, Randy Bachman's Vinyl Tap Stories. The book, which is Bachman's second, is a collection of some of his favorite stories that he shared with his listeners on the show, which mainly deals with his years before, during, and after his time with the Guess Who and BTO. And they show how he was such a major force in not only developing the Canadian rock music scene, but helping to bring a great deal of international exposure to it, and so that future generations of Canadian rock bands and singers can enjoy to this day. Now, the first set of stories in the book deal with his formative years in Winnipeg and gives us a fascinating look at how this very cold prairie metropolis was a hotbed in the development of Canadian rock music. In fact, it became the training ground for not only for Randy Bachman, but also for his contemporaries such as Burton Cummings and Neil Young. Now, the rest of the book's collection of stories deals with Bachman's years with the Guess Who and BTO, the origins of the group's best-known songs, not to mention his encounters with some of the greatest names in rock music, as well as a chapter about his other passion, which is guitars. The latter chapter clearly shows the impressive knowledge Bachman possesses about Gibson, Gresh, and Fender guitars, its origins, and their technical and sound qualities. And even if you've never played a guitar in your lifetime, this chapter is a great primer to the instrument that's the backbone of rock music. And throughout the rest of the book, the anecdotes that Bachman shares with the readers are so entertaining that it's quite difficult to isolate which ones are highlights because there's too numerous to mention. However, a couple of highlights of mine include the time when the Guess Who were offered by a British record executive a trip to London in 1967. They managed to make the transatlantic trip at their own expense, only to discover that no one bothered to organize any concert dates for the group there. Yeah, that could be a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
While Bachman toured with Ringo Starr's All-Star Band in 1995, Randy decided to give Ringo a unique gift for his 55th birthday, an actual star from an actual cluster of new stars that was recently discovered by Chicago Observatory. So Backman paid a nominal fee and managed to get the observatory to issue a certificate stating that one of those recently discovered stars will be known in the future and for eternity as, and this is true, the Ringo Star.
Wouldn't it be the Ringo Star Star?
No, they decided to chop off an R with that one.
Or the Richard Starkey Star?
No, he managed to just call it the plain Ringo Star with one R.
Okay.
And to top it all off, the last part of the book contains several lists that display Backman's all-time favorite songs according to his subject matter, whether they be novelty songs, songs with girls' names in the title, one-hit wonders, or mondegreens. If you know what a mondegreen is, it's songs with misheard or misinterpreted lyrics. So, this book...
I've got shoes. They're multiplying.
Yes, exactly. Or excuse me while I kiss this guy, from... Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
Yeah, or There's a Bathroom on the Right from CCR. Oh, I love that one. But this book, Randy Bachman's Vinyl Top Stories, is a marvelous treasure trove of tales of a fascinating, fulfilled career in rock music. Proves that Backman can tell an entertaining story as effectively as he can compose and perform a number one hit song. Fun stuff, let me tell you. And if you want to read about a couple other books about the early days of Canadian rock music in the 60s, may I recommend two books. One is called Before the Gold Rush by Nicholas Jennings. It was published in 1997, which tells the history of the Canadian rock music scene, especially in Toronto, where groups like Blood, Sweat, and Tears evolved, and how they founded Ian and Sylvia. And Gordon Lightfoot, who back then was a country music dancer on Country Hoedown, was called Gordon Leadfoot. It's a great story, great, great book. And also a book called Heart of Gold, which was a companion volume to a CBC miniseries in the early 80s about the history of Canadian rock music. Great pictures in there, especially my favorite one of Little Caesar and the Consoles with their contrast jackets that they were posing at this Toronto High School before a 1964 concert. But it's a really terrific book. It may be out of print, but CBC Enterprises, which was the book publishing arm of CBC, published back then. I think it was around 1982. Great book, great to leaf through. A lot of great Canadian rock music history, and you'd be surprised at how illustrious and how vast Canadian rock music was back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. It was really something, and this book really proves it.
And this week's book is?
It's called Randy Backman's Vinyl Tap Stories, published by Viking Canada, and it's $32.
And how can people find your work?
Well, we're going to take care of business by saying that you could read me in the West End Times every Saturday, or you could see me online at www.westendtimes.ca. Let it ride.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
Oh, you're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nellman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we have an idiot of the day coming up in just a bit here on the Stuff File program. But first, more Stuff File news. Talk about The Biggest Loser. An Italian couple is taking legal action to make their lame 41-year-old son finally leave home. No kidding. The desperate parents, who have not been named, say their son has a job but refuses to leave home and wants his clothes washed and his meals prepared. He has resisted all attempts to persuade him to fly from the nest, so mom and dad hired a lawyer who has given the middle-aged jerk 10 days to find himself a flat or have the case referred to court, with the prospect of being evicted. The dad said, "We can no longer go on like this. My wife has developed stress-related problems, and she's been in hospital recently. He has a good job, but he continues to live at home and wants his clothes washed and ironed and his meals cooked for him. He never wants to leave." Actually, young Italians are renowned for their reluctance to leave home, with a study released last year showing that 48% of offspring between the ages of 18 and 39 still live under their parents' roofs. Okay, now, I fail to see the problem here. Now, while, as those stats mentioned, many Italians live at home for a long time, that's because the kids and the parents get along. No problem with kids hanging around for a longer period of time. Hey, I'm guilty of exactly the same thing. But in this case, they don't get along. So why don't the parents simply stop cleaning and cooking for him? That alone should help do the trick, don't you think? I mean, if they're waiting on him hand and foot, why is he going to leave? Just stop catering to him. Problem solved. Anyway, moving right along, 25-year-old Christopher Christwell just YouTubed himself right out of a job. The Chowchilla, California Starbucks employee's YouTube post went viral and shows him playing the guitar and singing, wearing only a green Starbucks apron and his underwear. The song he sings goes, "It's just a cup of coffee. Give me a break. I shouldn't have to put up with this making minimum wage." Well, now you won't have to. Starbucks fired him. A company spokesperson, Alan Hollowitz, said, "While Christopher was expressing his own views in the video, the disparaging remarks about our customers and company are unacceptable and out of line with our commitment to our customers and partners." It was a boneheaded move, but if you go to the Stuff File website, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0110, you will find the link to his YouTube video. He's actually quite talented. He's dumb, but he's quite talented. But again, like I say, you be the judge. Anyway, moving right along. In North Carolina, Cumberland County District Judge Thomas A. Placey made a routine court decision a couple of weeks ago when he continued a preliminary hearing for the Hampton Township defendant accused in a standoff with police. But some in the gallery were not pleased with the decision, so they went home and Googled Placey and found his Facebook page. Well, it turns out his Facebook friend was the defendant. Barry Horn Jr. In his defense, Judge Placey says he accepts every friend request he gets. However, Shira Goodman, Deputy Director of Pennsylvanians for Modern Court, said Facebook is still a taboo area for judges and that it shouldn't be done. Yeah, not a bright move, Judge. Makes you kind of wonder about his judgments in general, doesn't it? "And it kind of made me mad," said Mandy Vaughn of Marietta, Georgia. Her mother had given Vaughn's 3-year-old son a Mattel Matchbox tow truck, which had a toll-free number printed on it. When Vaughn's mother called the number at her suggestion, she was very shocked. It was a sex line. When Mattel was asked to comment, they said they didn't know about the gaffe, but said the company now has a policy prohibiting the inclusion of phone numbers on toys. Mattel says the toy truck in question was produced in the year 2000 and is no longer made. It is only available via secondary markets like auction websites. Have you ever noticed that whenever there is a toll-free number or whenever someone's number is off by one digit, it always seems to be a sex-related location? Funny how that happens, isn't it? Anyway, Timothy Delarance Morrison, age 22, told police in Port St. Lucie, Florida, that it was a drug deal gone bad. So far as investigators can figure, Morrison had agreed to buy $100 worth of marijuana from a drug dealer. When the two met, Morrison robbed the dealer instead, sticking a gun into his car window and demanding the drugs. The dealer hastily shoved a bag out of the window and sped off. Morrison was furious when he opened the bag and found a hamburger. He fired at the fleeing dealer, police say, hitting it with several shots. Witnesses gave a good enough description of Morrison for police to find him, and he was held without bail on charges of attempted murder, burglary, escape, possession of marijuana, and providing a false name to the law enforcement officer. He was charged with possession of marijuana? What marijuana? He had a sandwich. Anyway, Lacey Hunter is suing Dex Media Incorporated because he says their Yellow Pages listing error has basically cost him his business and made him the butt of too many jokes. Lacey says business at his Bar 3 barbecue restaurants in Bozeman, Montana, has dropped off significantly after Dex Media mistakenly listed them in their Yellow Pages under animal carcass removal. Making a bad situation worse, someone sent the listing to Jay Leno to use in his headline segment on The Tonight Show, and Leno did. Lacey says he lost close to $20,000 in business and is tired of the prank phone calls and jokes. Dex spokesperson Chris Harden said it was an erroneous listing that the company removed from its online directory when it was discovered and then took steps to ensure it wouldn't be in future phone books. Lacey has been trying to reach an out-of-court settlement with Dex Media for $417,000. The publishing company initially expressed interest but never responded to the offer, so he's suing, accusing Dex Media of negligence, defamation, slander, and other charges, and is seeking compensation for the lost expense in building up his brand and for a television commercial to try to right the damage done by the Leno bit. Now, this is actually the first time I've seen a story that deals with the either wrong listings or wrong phone numbers that didn't have an error inadvertently leading to anything or something relating to porn, unlike the last story we told a little while back. But there's a first time for everything. And when Chicago, Illinois police pulled over Chandra Kidd, age 22, she ran. An officer chased her down, and when he caught up with her, she stuck a gun in the officer's chest and pulled the trigger. Nothing happened. They struggled and both fell. Then Kid got up, put the gun in the officer's chest again, and pulled the trigger again. Again, nothing happened. Investigation showed that during the foot chase, her gun cylinder had opened and all the bullets had fallen out. Unfortunately for Kid, the officer didn't have that problem. He shot her ass. No, literally, he shot her in the buttocks. After a trial on charges of attempted murder and unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon, Kid was sentenced to 55 years in prison. Yes, when it's a serious crime, they usually try kids as adults. Moving right along, Eric Epperson is a 22-year-old pizza restaurant employee, and he's also a disturbingly huge Hello Kitty fan. Now, he told FBI agents that he loved cute things, especially anything that was Hello Kitty brand items. He added that he dyed his hair and sometimes wore feminine clothing, including Hello Kitty clothing, to get a reaction out of people. His MySpace page is filled with an assortment of Hello Kitty-themed photographs. And by the way, who still has a MySpace page? Really. Unfortunately, he has also been arrested, and he has admitted to a tryst with a 14-year-old girl in San Diego whom he met on Facebook and had sex with. Now, it gets worse. Epperson also copped to having sex with about a dozen other female juveniles and said that he recorded himself having sexual intercourse with three girls and took a photo of another girl's private parts because it looked nice. Oh, it gets worse still. He also admitted to sending nude pictures of his private parts to several girls, adding that he could not find any girls over 18 to date because of what he believed to be his own 15-year-old girl personality. Amazingly, he's also in the process of joining the Navy so that he could travel to Japan and see the world. That will have to wait a while, as he is currently being held without bail in an Indiana lockup. If convicted of traveling across state lines for the purpose of having sex with a minor, he could get 30 years. Wonder how that Hello Kitty stuff will go over in prison. And Navachia Edwards, age 23, was arrested for bank robbery after allegedly dressing up as a nun to rob a TCF bank branch in Palos Heights, Illinois. She and an accomplice did a credible job getting away with $120,000 in cash from the bank's vault, but she was caught because she left the receipt to two adult funny nun costumes and two nun-on-the-run adult masks in a rental car used as a getaway vehicle. Edwards needed cash to pay restitution for the $20,000 she embezzled from her job as a teller at Chase Bank in Country Club Hills, according to prosecutors. Now, Edwards' boyfriend is being questioned by the FBI as an accomplice. Surveillance cameras recorded him coming into the TCF Bank a few hours before the robbery and lifting his leg up onto the counter to see if he could jump it. During questioning, agents say he broke down crying, "My life is ruined." Well, actually, that happened when he met Edwards, but I digress. Anyway, on to our idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff I'll present, the idiot of the day.
In Greeley, Colorado, 22-year-old Juan Gonzalez Jr. was arrested for allegedly breaking into a woman's home and stealing her cell phone. He's to blame for his own undoing after he foolishly began texting one of her friends with the phone and even sent her a friend request on Facebook. Police located the phone using technology from a cell tower, and when they arrested Gonzalez, he was still wearing the same clothes the victim had described to police on the day he entered her home. He's going to have to change his Facebook location to The Big House now. Why would someone steal a cell phone and then start texting the friend of said victim from said phone? One reason and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0110. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And if you go to the website, you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And again, that's 0110. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, aboard China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.